This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Welcome to the Geekscape Book Club for April 2024. As always, I am Christian Blatt. Over there is Count Eric Connor. Eric, how are you today?
I am doing swell. We had a lovely chat this morning about X-Men 97, and now we get into the webs of Spider-Woman, which is exciting.
We are definitely going to get into the webs of Spider-Woman. There's a lot to cover. And I told it before on Marvel Movie Talk, the show that we do right here on Geekscape. And the reason that we're telling a Spider-Woman story is very simple. I asked around and I really wanted a Madame Web story. And no one had any good ones. And they were like, you should just do something about one of the other characters. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do Spider-Woman, let's start with Jessica Drew, the original 70s Spider-Woman, who obviously continued to be the character, you know, sort of had a little bit of a layoff. And we're going to talk about Spider-Woman Origin. It is a five-issue series from, I believe, 2007. And the interesting thing about it is this is sort of the creation of this backstory of her parents. And I think there might have been elements to it, but she was largely a forgotten character by the era that I was reading comics in the early to mid 80s. I think she was a guest in like one issue of the regular Avengers book. And then there was the Julia Carpenter, the other Spider-Woman, the one that had the black suit, just like Spider-Man. You know, his black suit. So the Jessica Drew character, I believe, like Carol Danvers, ended up depowered at one point, and she became a private investigator. And the fascinating thing about that is that Michael Bendis wanted his Jessica Jones story to be about Jessica Drew. And then Marvel said, let's not do that with the character. So he just created a new character and told the same stories, but
with the same first name.
Jeez. Yeah, I know. It kind of sounds the same, you know, Jessica Jones, Jessica Drew. Yeah. So, I think it's very thinly veiled that you can kind of see that Jessica Drew ends up in kind of that sort of a storyline. But, you know, I think they were able to give Jessica Jones plenty, you know, alias as it were, give her plenty of backstory to differentiate her. But it's interesting to think about it, especially in the context of this book. So heading into Spider-Woman Origin, Eric, what was your familiarity with the Jessica Jones Spider-Woman character?
To say minimal might be overselling it. I will not lie, I was a fan of this costume, I think, as much as I was a fan of the character, because I didn't really know much about the character.
Sure.
I don't know much about the various spider women. And by the way, if you see Madame Web, you know less by the end of it. Whatever you know, it took it away. So I came into this pretty blind. I do remember her sort of brief appearances in comics back in the day. And again, as a 12, 11-year-old boy, that costume definitely woke
it was the me, it know? Was the webs, right? The webs under her arms, that was what you noticed as a pubescent lad.
What else would you notice? I mean, is there anything else to the costume? Oh, there's
the boots,
the
boots,
the gloves,
the boots. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the yellow gloves, the yellow boots. Yeah, that's very
but true. But I think this is actually, you know, one of those runs that they didn't have this as like a collection, so we had to do it the old-fashioned way, digitally, of course, on Marvel Unlimited in order
just
to
like
it.
Our grandparents did. We had to go to Marvel Unlimited, which I gotta give a plug to Marvel Unlimited right now. They continue this promotion where you can get a month of Marvel Unlimited for 97 cents because it's a promotion for X-Men 97. And if you want to read our book for next month, you'll want to do that. And that is what I did. I'm not going to lie. It's probably the fourth email address I've used for Marvel Unlimited, but I was able to get 97 cents for my first month. So very excited to be able to do
that. You used Michael Shirley's email address, admit it.
I admit nothing. So, I remember Jessica Jones showing up. Nope, I did it. Jessica See? Drew also. Uh-huh. And Jessica Jones showed up, but also Jessica Drew showed up in Civil War, which when the Civil War movie came out, I borrowed a bunch of comics from a friend because I had never read that series. And, it's like, oh, okay. So some of this backstory didn't surprise me because of some of the things that I've read. I would occasionally pick up more recent issues of some of her more recent titles, but I didn't really know that much about her. So it was fun to kind of take this journey. And also when Brian Michael Bendis is in charge, you kind of know what you're about to get. You know, I mean, I think that there's a little bit of an expectation. It's surprisingly funny at times, and at times very real, in that the real world definitely bleeds into the superhero universe at times. You know, I think that's it's all very fair, you know. So as we're reading these five issues, what were some of the thoughts that you had sort of as the story unfolds, Eric?
Before we even get into the story, I wanted to actually second, you brought up Marvel Unlimited, and it's going to sound like, I don't know, they're filling my dog bowl with kibble.
I wish they were giving you a lockjaw sized dog bowl filled of gold doubloons.
It would be lovely, but we're not. But I will say, reading Marvel Unlimited actually on my MacBook, I found like even the quality of images I was able to grab much better than, you know, I mean, I know it's sort of defunct now, but like Comixology. So I thought, you know, Marvel Unlimited does a really nice job of laying out the titles, you know, scrolling through it. And so I found actually just the read of it. I mean, whenever I can for this book club, you know, like even here, I got my buddy Echo. Don't mind opening the wallet a little bit just to sort of, you know, actually physically have a copy, because it kind of takes me back to, you know, obviously my younger days. But I found this was actually a really kind of nice way to read it. I found the art was strong. But also, I will say, I loved how they made her like such a kind of a wounded character. I mean, she's sort of, a lot of these characters, of course, have tragic backstories. I mean, almost all of them do. But there was something kind of specific about this and her, I mean, talk about daddy issues. My God. Like, I mean, this gets into like, I think you would have to go over to like the movie version of the Hulk, where his dad was Nick Nolte, which alone would be enough.
Yeah, that's no, there's elements. There's elements of the backstory, obviously, of Black Widow from the Marvel Universe. But Nikita, you know, there's a lot of that sort of like tragic of, you know, just experimenting on your own children and dealing with it in that way that I found.
Which
it,
we both do as parents every day, but not intentionally.
No, there's a lot of accidental experiments. Tons. You know, the amount of radiation is all within safe levels, I assure you.
Safe-ish.
It's funny because when you sent me your collection of some of the images, there was something about the beginning of the story that it reminded me of a special moment that you and I shared together when we went to see the blockbuster film Madam Web, which, again, a character we could get no recommendations for comic book stories to tell.
Not one.
No, I mean, we could have gone back to stories she appeared in, but they weren't about her. Go ahead. What was your
thought? I had recommended the novelization of the screenplay, which I think would have really explained all the missing pieces. But
but unfortunately, that book is also sold out everywhere because of the demand for it. You know, it's like
all three when, copies of it were bought.
It's when Alfred Hitchcock bought up all of the copies of the book that Psycho was based on because he didn't want anybody to know the ending. So they just went to bookstores around the country and just bought every copy so that people couldn't read it, which is a great ploy if you can get it. So there's some degree of familiarity. And I know you sent me something, but I want to showcase Mama Drew. I believe her name is Miriam. The Latrodectus Wundagore, the Wundagore Widow. So this is experimentation and research dealing with spiders. And you and I could, of course, recreate one of the moments from the greatest blockbuster of the, well, really the 21st century, but of 2024 so far. But I thought it would be appropriate to just remind everyone, thanks to the help of Mr. John Mulaney, who spoke about this at this year's Academy Awards, one of the greatest moments in film happened this year.
Without sound, we wouldn't have been able to hear such classic lines as, "You're going to need a bigger boat. I'll have what she's having." And he was in the Amazon with my mother when she was researching spiders just before she died. Or what about...
So, yes, it gave me an excuse to go back to that, which we may never run out of joy for Madam Webb getting name-checked at the Academy Awards. But I thought that it's funny because what you did was you sent me a still, and I was like, oh, I already have that clip that I want to play.
Oh, but, yeah.
You have this image. Drink. He was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died. And I was like, oh, man, they definitely somebody read that when they took a swing at Madam Web, didn't they, Eric?
Well, clearly, like, we see the inspiration here some almost 20 years ago. That one moment, which just takes up a couple of the pages of the first issue, spawned probably the most important line of dialogue in this century. And I'm going to say the next century as well. I don't think I'll be around for it, but I'm calling it
but
now.
Madam Web will, because we'll pass down to generations our...
it's up to our children to keep
copies
it alive.
Of the novelization of Madam Web. Yeah, I agree.
I should write that.
I can put you in touch with the screenwriters of that script who might be able to tell you. They could also tell you if you'd be interested in writing the adaptation of Morbius, which they also
wrote. A side, B side.
They are friends of our buddies, of our buddy Jonathan London over here at Geekscape, and I've seen them interviewed. They're great guys, and what I'll say, and these are not words from their mouth. Sometimes you write something, and then what you end up seeing on the screen is completely different than the thing you wrote. Sometimes that happens, Eric. Yeah.
So. Oh, I mean, listen. I mean, how many writers you and I both know who either sue to get their name on something or sometimes sue them to get their name off something. So it doesn't always match the credit and the content don't always line up perfectly. That we are all aware of.
Sometimes you just say you were the head writer on the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar roast, and we don't know if it's actually true. We don't even know if you graduated from college. So there are a lot of things out there where people sometimes want to be associated with, and sometimes they don't. So the story, the early part of it, it's really that whole first issue just sort of unfolds in a way that Miriam Drew is pregnant, and I have an image for our video audience, and I see there's a few of you watching, and thank you. We appreciate that. I assume some of you are just kind of left over from when we were doing Marvel Movie Talk about X-Men 97, but we appreciate the conversation, and we are talking Spider-Woman Origin from, I think it's 2007, possibly 2008, but Brian Michael Bendis. So talk a little bit about some of your thoughts as her father just kind of, you know, sits there and worries about, well, we're made to think he's worried.
Those early moments actually are kind of emotional. I mean, even this idea that he was so worried about this child in the womb before she even arrived, that it actually made him emotionally shut down. You know, like he couldn't imagine, you know, allowing his heart to be open to her really ever. And that idea too, I mean, you know, not to get too serious on this, but you know, when you get, when you got a baby coming, you do all these tests, what are they going to be? You know, do they have anything? Like, is there something to worry about? Like, this is, I guess sometimes that downside, right, of science and technology is like, it gives you, we know more, which means we worry more. We have more things to fear. And so I found these early moments actually to be weirdly connectable until, you know, she arrived and then he turned into a monster. Then I like to think I'm a better father than that. But I very much remember some of these sort of moments of concern, you know, when my wife was pregnant with our two kids, you know, this, the kind of waiting of like, is everything gonna be okay? Like, you go and you kind of get your ultrasound or you get your genetic testing. And the whole time it's like, you know, almost like scared to sort of click on the results. And then of course he has a beautiful, healthy child, but that's not enough for him.
Right. And, you know, there is that moment as well, you know, where we sort of have that reveal. And, you know, I agree with you. It was something that I thought about. And, you know, with our second child, my daughter Lucy, during some of those early tests, we were given an indication that there was something that might have been wrong with her that would have been very serious. And we had to go see a specialist. But between the time we actually get to the specialist, you're very worried and you're worried about what it means. And I'll say my daughter, Lucy, we knew she was going to be born with a cleft lip and a cleft palate. They've done amazing surgery at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles that you'd never really know unless you got right up there to look. But when we found out it wasn't something with her heart where, you know, it would have been very difficult for her to survive. And it was like, oh, it's only a cleft lip and cleft palate, the relief, you know, that it's like, oh, it's something physical that there are surgeries for. They did one on her when she was a month old. So, yeah, I not quite knowing where this was going, I was like identifying with sort of with the parents here.
It's surprisingly serious, Marvel movie talk, by the way. Or I'm sorry.
No, I know.
It's a Geekscape book club.
Yes, this is, here's a secret.
Sorry.
It's the same show. Shh.
Oh, no.
It's basically the same show.
Apologies for everyone who's here just because you thought we were going to deep dive on Sydney Sweeney's costume. Sorry, guys. We're getting real in this episode.
Yeah, no, look, and stories that I, even when we started, I wasn't sure that I would go into it, but it was something that I was thinking about. And, you know, her father has a line here that I'd like to highlight for, you know, our visual audience and our audio audience. I will just read it. But it just says, all of her little fingers and her little toes are exactly where they belong. I could not be more thankful. I could not be more terrified, which he's very terrified of. He knows about the massive amount of radiation. But I think we're all terrified in that moment. Less so with your second kid, if you've had one, but that first time you're a child and you're just like, I have, you really don't know what's coming. And shockingly, a very relatable character in the first like 15 pages, you know, you can understand that he's driven by his work, of course,
right?
But you think that he puts his family first. But oh boy, he does not put his family first.
Well, no, he puts a different family first. He just puts the Hydra family first, which is a family. I mean, I don't want to dismiss, you know, they care about each other, but they don't share our values per se, and they probably would kill me very quickly. They'd get around to.
I'm on the B list. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
You're the also ran. I'm prime real estate for what they would try to eradicate.
Yeah. I'm the second drop of new shoes. You know, the secret drop of Nikes. Yeah. You know, you start to really get the feel. You know, and look, he's not entirely wrong that you let your she's like nine or something at this point. You let her handle this incredibly poisonous spider. And yes, it's interesting that she's able to touch it, but she shouldn't be in a situation where she could touch
it. And that was the mom doing it.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
The mom just let her, you know, she's like, oh, don't open that. Oh, it's open. Yeah. Okay. Why don't you crawl on your face?
It gave me, if you remember that great old Saturday Night Live sketch with Dan Aykroyd as the comic, toy manufacturer who did all these dangerous toys.
Irwin Mainway. We got a bag of glass.
Look right here. It says, hey, kid, look out, bag of glass.
Yeah. So and Johnny Switchblade. Yes, exactly. all the greats. That's funny. So. Which one of her parents is like Irwin Mainway from the toy company on Saturday Night Live in 1975?
They both fit that bill, actually. Even the whole thing with the spider was strange because I don't know. You didn't get. I mean, yeah, mom could name check them. And by the way, Christian, I'm impressed with how well you articulated that word. I did not take you for was it a paleontologist? Who's the one who studies insects? Or go ahead.
No, a herpetologist is snakes, right? So I don't know. And usually I can count on Daniel Drew to be in the chat of our shows on Geekscape, right. But I know he's working now. So
shame on him.
I could Google it, but I could also
let the mystery be. To.
But Wondegore obviously is a backstory for Marvel, and that was a part that I could relate to.
Entomology. Sorry.
There we go.
I think I name checked dinosaur studying entomology.
Yeah, paleontology, the great Professor Ross Geller is known as one of the most famous paleontologists, at least in the New York City area in the late 90s. So we sort of get kind of the, you know, you'll get a lot of these inciting incidents of characters that are, you know, so technically... I guess because Jessica was born with these powers, I guess technically she's a mutant, even though, they basically irradiated her mother's womb while she was still in it to create the mutation. She is a mutation. So a lot of times we get these kind of inciting incidents for these characters where under extreme duress, their powers exhibit themselves. We've talked about Magneto. And it was incredibly well shown in X-Men First Class. He's still very young. He doesn't fully have his powers, but he's able to bend the gates, the metal of the gates at the concentration camp because he is, you know, being taken away from his parents. And this is similar to that because her father, I mean, he's choking her, right? I mean, he's on top of her. Yeah, yeah.
He would have killed her.
Yeah.
No, this is justified. I mean, this image, by the way, I love this frame so much, this panel so much. You know, because it even gives me, you know, a little Return of the Jedi vibes. But like how scared she looks at what she's doing, but knowing she has to do it. I mean, there's just so much story in this one image.
I agree. It's and again, there's some great imagery in here. Even, you know. As your superhero stories go, there's not a lot of superpowered things that happen in these five issues, which I was kind of pleasantly surprised by. You know, it is really like, you know, it feels like it's a backstory for, you know, characters that, like, I used La Femme Nikita earlier, you know, as an example. You know, that's sort of a feel that you get, but obviously Black Widow is more appropriate for the Marvel Universe. But just this idea. And, you know, I had a general sense of where this story was going because of the little bits that I know of Jessica Drew's backstory. But it's still fairly jarring to have your character wake up in their birthday suit, as we used to say, surrounded by Hydra. And the idea in these early issues, Eric, is that her parents might have thought that they were working for the British government. And I think that Mrs. Drew, that might be accurate. But Mr. Drew has a line very late in the series that he's like, what are you trying to rescue me from? I'm not being held by Hydra. I am Hydra, you know, and that's like, you have to really understand sort of that mentality, you know? I mean, obviously with the Red Skull and sort of everything, all the lore of Hydra, we've even alluded to it. I mean, it's like being a Nazi, or as Brad Pitt would say, a Nazi, you know? It's like you are Hydra, you know? And I think it's incredibly well done in this story, and just sort of the modern telling of Hydra, you know, sort of the moment as it was shown in Winter Soldier, some of the whispers, you've Gary Shandling with a Hell Hydra, you know? So one of the funniest things he's ever said, which reminds me of a joke I cannot tell on this.
Friends.
I'll tell you later. not on this show, but talk about dark. Believe me, I've pitched it. Jonathan's just like, no, nobody wants to know what you're up to after dark. And I said, you know what, Jonathan, you're probably right. It's better for the brand, it's better for the network, it's better for me, it's better for my family,
as you zoom into the nudity.
Yeah, well, I could also highlight it. But your thoughts on sort of this reveal of, you know, we get this a lot too. It's like, well, we're Hydra. You know, we're actually the good guys.
Right.
The bad guys always say.
Well, not to mention, let's just be honest. If I woke up seemingly from a coma after 10 plus years and I'm naked, my mind's going to wander to very dark places very quickly. What have you been doing to me for the last 10 plus years? So it's not to mention they're also brandishing, assault weapons. It's not the most pleasant hello. How are you? Like you're not coming with love.
No, it's not a hello. It's not what you want to hear. It's not something
hey there,
like
sleepyhead. No, nothing like that.
If I woke up after 10 plus years, my first thing would be like, hey, I'm sure the Lost finale was just as good as the premiere, right? Right? Why is nobody talking about this show? It was the greatest thing I ever saw before I was knocked out. I mean, we loved Lost. What happened?
I would ask them about the Mets and the Giants. Just like, did they make it back? How much did they lose by?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. But so I think that... you know, we get this early iteration of, you know, this character who doesn't really remember, you know, which is great for storytelling. And, you know, the idea that it's like, we're your friends. We're going to help you remember. Meet my friend Mentolo. So I believe that's the character that this guy is from sort of a... he's not even like a B villain. He's like a D or G villain. You know, he's from the villain verse, but you know, it's
in the video game, he's the one that there's like five guys in the same costume that you get early on after you put in your initial quarters.
Right. Exactly. If there's an action figure for this series, he's the one that they don't even try to sell in stores. They just make you send in proofs of purchase that you bought for others. He's the old man, Anakin Skywalker. Yes. Thank you. But in any case, I think that, you know, sort of this idea that, like, obviously we've seen enough stories like this, so we know she's being played. And we also might have the spoiler, Eric, Hydra's not the good guys.
Yeah, I think we kind of come in knowing, it's called dramatic irony in writing, when the audience knows more than the characters. And this thing is filled to the brim with dramatic irony. We all know Hydra. She doesn't. She was a child, too, when she was last put in. And, you know, maybe this is a part of the story I think could have been interesting to explore is... one, she wakes up, and so she hasn't had the emotional maturity of the last 10 years. So she's going to be waking up as basically a 9-year-old in a 20-year-old's body. Yeah. That would have been kind of an interesting thing, particularly with powers. So she hasn't sort of, you know, she wouldn't know how to harness this stuff at all. She wouldn't know how to harness her emotions. So I think that actually could have been a pretty, you know, kind of kick-ass issue. But they sort of zip past it, and she does some training, and the Taskmaster lives up to the name, is quite good as a teacher, as I assume she would be. you know, but I just think that's a piece where they kind of, kind of maybe skipped over the stuff.
It's a great point. And maybe it's as simple as if they had 6 issues instead of 5. 5 is an unusual number for a miniseries. They were usually 4, 6, or 12. You know, 5 is not usually what happened, you know, but
something happened to create a 5th, right? Something fell off or something got too fast.
It was probably more that they had 4 and it was like, I can't tell the story. And they're like, we'll give you 1 more issue, but not 2.
Don't come back.
This is still Spider-Woman. You know, this isn't a Deadpool fights Venom story where you don't have to worry about selling copies, you know? I agree, but I do like getting the backstory being part of some Marvel lore, like the character Bova, who factors into the backstory of both Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, raising them on in Wundagore. We see the High Evolutionary, who I'm still expecting to see at some point in the films. You know, I mean, I know we got the High Evolutionary basically in Guardians 3, but I feel like that character would be a potential big bad at some point, you know. And I think that you think that guy didn't clone himself, you know? So I would be shocked if we don't see him again, is my point. There was a whole summer crossover of the Evolutionary War that ran through every annual published by Marvel in perhaps 1990, maybe. I'm not quite sure, but somewhere in that range. I think there's a lot more to be done with that character. But I think we've seen things very reminiscent of the training sequences. I do think very well done. Taskmaster obviously is the perfect choice. And, sort of Jessica feeling she's battle ready because, of course, I'm ready to save the world. And it's like, no, you're ready to destroy it, you know? And I mean, it's sort of a similar story where the character did not have exactly the same thing. But the way that we all got to know Jennifer Garner long before she won our hearts as Elektra was the show Alias. And there was a reveal in season 1 that it's like, oh, this organization you work for is the bad guys. This is not the good guys. Yes, yes, yes. We told you we were one of the good guys, but we're actually not. And, it's a similar era to this, but, I think that the reveals that come to the audience are different than the just sort of the shock for the character, right?
Right. Well, I always enjoy, you know, in Marvel, like Hydra could be sort of everywhere and anywhere. Even, yeah. You know, a good 70 years after, 80 years after World War II, that Hydra is still kicking. And they've gotten good mileage out of this sort of, criminal, underground that is Hydra. So I think it worked here. You know, I think the idea of experimentation, of course, anytime you deal with that, it's a pretty straight line to Hydra to Nazis, so yeah, it doesn't take a much of a leap of suspension of disbelief. But, like, oh yeah, well of course, you know.
By the way, to deal with sort of the fine line between the good guys and bad guys, at one point Nick Fury says, if it's why I want to replace all of you with super soldiers. So it's like, yeah, okay, their ideals are good, but their methods are actually not that dissimilar. But I do agree with Nick Fury in this series. There's sometimes where, goddamn it, I need a Dr. Pepper and I need it right now.
Yeah. and it was in fun seeing the David Hasselhoffian incarnation here of Nick Fury, as much as we all love Samuel L. Jackson. You know, a reminder that in another life, it would have been the Hoff up there on that big screen if it was made in 89.
In a better life, it would have been.
In a real life.
Interesting. Yeah, exactly. I thought that it was fun to see. And then, you know, we have some fun imagery for Jessica sort of being intercepted by S.H.I.E.L.D. and having things explained to her. And she's like, well, I don't want to work for you guys either. And that seems to be kind of the enduring and possibly endearing point you know, just sort of laying low as she does. And, you know, we're taken through the dance scene that I just showed for our visual audience, obviously reminded you of Baron Zemo in Falcon Winter Soldier.
I'm absolutely convinced. Look at the colors. The colors are the same. I mean, he's like, I mean, you know, Baron's not quite got the moves or the dress, but
yeah, I was going to say this is one of those In Touch magazines. Who wore it better?
Jessica Drew, well, and also the mask guy who was reading her dreams and her thoughts, it gave me so much of that Cyclops vibe of the mask that you pray you will never see in our lifetime on the screen.
I really have nightmares about the idea that anyone thought that Scott Summers would knowingly put that on his head.
I do like his shield with it.
Yeah, he's of course, so mad. It's like the figure wars. But it's, you know, he finally realized that he should stop wearing the stupid skull cap, Cyclops, and he had his hair. That was a great Jim Lee affectation, and welcomed. And that's why we have that look in iterations of the animated series, the 92 and the 97 version. But to think like, no, but what about this? And there's even a worse helmet a little bit later in the Krakoa era. It's like even bigger, you know? Well, so
there was a wrestler named Mr. X who had a very similar mask as that as well. And he was a guy who lost almost every week. So I'm not intimidated by someone with a very large letter on a mask on their head.
Yeah, no. Did he ever wrestle Goldust?
I don't know. If true, but now I got to do a deep dive.
Welcome
to my evening.
Yeah, that's yeah. Welcome to my YouTube algorithm.
Yeah.
So there's some interesting imagery in there, but of course, Jessica's really able to show that, you know, they mentioned the multiple forms of martial arts that she's been taught, and the fact that, you know, obviously we know she has her powers. At no time does Hydra think, oh, well, this is going to be used against us, isn't it? And Taskmaster is that typical villain who's like, I can
bring that image back up, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
For our radio audience, what's going on here is this great little battle at the nightclub. And I was just taken aback by, you know, and obviously the comics aren't afraid to show things. But this moment here, Taskmaster's pushing the gun off and she shoots one of his compadres in the head. And it's very much a kill shot. And you see the exit wound in the back of the head. And it was, considering this series, these issues didn't have that much action, that moment I was like, oh, wow, that popped. Like, that was pretty violent. And so I think it was kind of smart in that end. Like, it reminds you how dangerous she can be.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that you don't just see the bam in a little, like, blood spatter. Instead you actually see, oh yeah, no, that's a bullet go through in the brain, and there it is, just off to the side of the frame, but noticeable nonetheless.
Yeah, it's just a reminder that a loud bam doesn't always get followed by a delicious emerald agasse jambalaya. It is not what always follows a great bam like that. But yeah, I think that, look, I've referenced some sort of iterations of, you know, the lone wolf female spy character. You know, there was at one point there was a talk of, you know, having Natalie Portman do an adult version of her character from The Professional, film also known as Leon, which I was just like, yeah, I feel like, especially in this era that this came out, and, you know, we talked about the Femme Nikita being turned into a TV series, multiple TV series, in all honesty, and the Bridget Fonda knockoff, Point of No Return, talked about Alias, to some extent, Ron Lola Run, that's a little bit of a different story, but, you know, I'm just thinking of like early 2000s, and, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, the only thing missing is a soundtrack that includes Limp Bizkit. And possibly Creed. Can you take me higher? You know, while she's fighting or something. I don't know. But, just thinking out loud, Eric. You know, that's what we do over here.
Or Smack My B Up, that great classic song.
Oh, the Prodigy song. Yeah. Yeah. Smack My Drew Up, as it were, for Jessica Drew. Yeah.
Or Daniel.
But oh my gosh, I wish he was here with us, but that's all right. I know this is clearly Jessica Drew's related to her buddy.
We speak your name.
Daniel Drew, yeah. So as we're sort of moving along in this story, and you know, this is before she, you know, really is, she doesn't actually go to become an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in this story. She's sort of tolerant of them. And she even says to Fury that she's respectful of the fact that he was actually didn't just dangle a carrot. He actually provides her and he helps her, you know, and she appreciates that, you know. But as we talked about, she's smart enough to know, it's like, you know, you're not that different than Hydra, you know. It's just you're an acronym. It refers to different things, you know. What do you think sort of about the way that they tell the story of Jessica begrudgingly helping out Fury as not one of his agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but S.H.I.E.L.D. adjacent, I guess, is the best way to refer to it?
Well, they both want to weaponize her. I mean, I think that's what's interesting in the writing here is, you know, that fine line between one and the other. What is it? I married to the mob. Great quote in there. Was it?
Sure.
You're no better than the mob, lady. The mob is filled with venomous bloodsuckers who are murderers. We work for the president of the United States. and so here, this idea of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Hydra, which I know has come up a lot in the comics and the movies as well. It's sort of the, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
And so
I think, you know, for her, she does just want to be left alone. Like, she was born into this. She had 10 years of her life taken from her, in essence. Her parents are gone. She just wants to be able to put on a, you know, a form-fitting dress and party. And as a 20-year-old, yeah, she should.
And
she
who amongst us that. Didn't want to do that when we were in our 20s, Eric?
See, when I was in 20 living in Philadelphia, yeah, you bet I looked like that out in the dance floor more than once. And it's with a similar response by the military. But we love this image for our radio listeners.
Everybody gathered around the Victrola for our fireside chat with President Connor. He'll tell you about what we're looking at here. Go ahead, everybody.
All right, now everyone is getting zapped. She touched the taskmaster, it gets everyone else. Everyone gets zapped. Think the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Without the biblical overtones and undertones. So, in essence, like that scene's kind of great. And meanwhile, it's like Max. I'm sorry, I called him Max. Nick knows her parents are alive. He weaponizes that. It also made for a great end to the issue, which was, wait, who told you your parents were dead? Which is, you know, again, kind of a nice turn. And I think actually all five issues did a good job with sort of revealing things in pieces.
He brings this up.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But no, if they did a straight adaptation of this, this is the perfect blueprint for storytelling for binge television. You know,
it's
the way Netflix series would be like, oh no, now I gotta watch, I gotta keep watching, you know? And I mean, look, that's a big part of what makes comic books work and make us care about them is that I can't miss the next issue, you know, and just, right. I just had to click a button on the same laptop I'm looking into right now to watch it on Marvel Unlimited for 97 cents a month, but finish your point.
And by the way, you keep flaunting that. I realized I had never canceled my membership from last year. So I was like, Marvel Unlimited was sitting in wait for me this whole time as I got fleeced. So I hear you're 97 cents.
I'm 97 cents poorer, Eric. I don't think you're listening to my problem.
That's true. Well, I'm listening to my problem, which is far more than 97 cents I've given to Marvel Unlimited. So now I got to compensate and read a lot. But this was, I mean, really every issue you finish, it's like, yeah, you would want to keep reading, even if I didn't have to, you know, share my microphone and my camera with Christian right now and all you lovely people. Like, you couldn't stop reading this thing midstream. I mean, it really was very smartly written. And then here, it gets into kind of an interesting element, which is she gets reunited with her mom, but only for a second. Like, she shows up.
I found that to be so surprising the way that they did it. You know, I would have expected more of like a dangling plot line where she just misses her mom and ends up, you know, and instead it's like, oh, mom's dead. And I'm like, oh, that feels like a waste. I can't imagine they went and did anything with that. I feel like they probably explained the character at some point, but
yeah, felt like another kind of maybe, you know, and what I think is a very good series, maybe another storytelling miss. It's like, your mom's alive. Oh, sorry. I meant not alive. So she runs over.
Oh, did I say that your mom was alive? Yeah, well, I mean, that's she's dead. Yeah, that's the ticket. Yeah.
The good news is she was alive for the last 10 years, and you didn't get to see her for any of them. But her mom became almost like, I don't know, like Sharon Stone's character in Casino. Like, just like,
it's a great, seemingly, it's a great comparison. Yes.
Just kind of like took a bunch of money, ran, and
probably
went through a fair amount of drug, drink, and gentleman callers. And she gets killed by Hydra while Jessica's on the run over there. She just misses her mom's breathing life.
Yeah, which I guess that's the tragedy. They wanted it to be even more tragic. And by the way, to lose her mother, and then when she ends up reunited with her father, which we'll talk about in a moment, it makes it that much worse. Because oh, I don't have mom. Another image that you grabbed for our visual audience. Is sort of, she's being outed having lying in wait undercover, trying to get the information as to where her father is, still at the point where she feels like he needs to be rescued. But this is a fairly spectacular dive into the water. And I don't mean just because of the Marvel swimsuit issue caliber attire that she's wearing here, but I'm surprised that it's never been done in a movie, the move where someone is hiding underwater playing dead and a shark comes by at that exact moment and the shark gets shot and the blood goes to the surface. It's like, how many times does it happen? I mean, it's like every James Bond movie. It's like, well, nobody could have survived that. All right, let's go have lunch.
Clearly he's dead, so taking even 5 extra minutes to find any piece of his corpse would be futile. I did enjoy, though, this eyeball popping out of the shark's head. As I enjoyed the sound effect of fizz fizz, which of course gave me all the Alka-Seltzer feels I was hoping for that day.
Well, it was a relief for Jessica that the shark was gunned down instead of her. That's a two birds, one stone sort of a solution, right, Eric?
Yeah, and that whole scene it's funny, that whole scene too, where she's like, what, she's been seducing this old man for months? Oh, and for a radio audience, pop, pop, fizz, fizz. It's rare I can find an old Alka-Seltzer ad and make it relevant for storytelling, but here we are.
Here we are, yeah, exactly.
And you give me fizz, fizz, I'll give you plop, plop, all day.
I know. I feel like this should be the thumbnail for the episode, but I'll probably choose something that has Spider-Woman.
Oh, do you want clicks or not, man? This is what brings it.
That's true. This is you want to talk about eye candy and yes, clickbait. But look. I mean, it's a fun sequence. It felt like out of an action movie, sort of the way we're talking about this
or
story.
Miami Vice or something, like, right?
It
was a strange tonal shift almost, but, and very quick, like she had been with him for months, it seemed.
It feels like something that Brian Michael Bendis had, you know, in a screenplay he tried to sell, and he's like, all right, that didn't work, but I know I can work this into the Spider-Woman origin story. Just you wait. You might think I can't do it, but I can. And we build to the reunion that we were expecting to get. You know, Jessica kind of walks back in and, you know, she still has the mind of a child in a lot of ways. And just that image that Eric gave me that I'm showing to our visual audience where she just says, daddy, and he's looking and he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that my daughter's still alive. And he immediately says, is it okay if I take a blood sample and your temperature and possibly a urine specimen? I mean, I don't think he said that last one, but although it does come up later, I think she references it. And you have the image that I referenced earlier. It's just his confession that, Jessica, sweetie, I am Hydra. You know, you're not rescue. You know, you're not rescuing me from. You know, that's like the idea that if only I could get that Palpatine fellow out of the Empire, then everything in his life would be better. You know, right. He is the Empire. Your father is Hydra, not on a Palpatine level. It's more of a middle management, you know. But you know, it's
when also Jessica Sweetie. I mean, it's you know the. Captain America saying I am or Hail Hydra still is, you know, the greatest of the heel turns we'll ever have. But that moment there with Sweetie, I am Hydra, it really cuts. And he hasn't seen her. He thought she was dead. So great seeing you. Can I have a blood sample, please? It's an unusual ask.
I need to study. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you know, my son comes back from a Cub Scout camping trip. I do think like, can we go down to the lab real fast? I just want to make sure you weren't exposed to any cosmic rays or gamma rays or any of the things that could create a superhero in my household.
We're going to play Daddy's favorite game. Check for lice every day, you know, and so like that reunion is great because right. She just saw her mom. Was just killed and now finds her dad in perfectly seemingly good health. Then, you know, he's like, oh, no, there's nothing to rescue. Sorry.
In fact, I've been really busy trying to recreate the experiment. And this was an image that you sent to me that I thought.
I'm so fascinated by this.
The iterations of potential Spider-Woman clones saying, please don't make us kill you. We really are big fans. Don't you see we're all part of the same? And then there's the one who says, I'm sleeping with your father. That is a very Brian Michael Bendis sort of, let's get that line in there.
You know. That moment was like, I read it and I'm like, wait, what? And I remember I went back and then yeah. I'm like, okay, because that's usually not an in. When you're trying to, I don't know, befriend someone. It's like, oh, I'm sleeping with your dad. Yeah. Usually pushes them off.
I would say most often, yeah.
It seems like a curious place to sort of bring out that info. That I feel like you start with, oh, I'm a big fan of your dad's. Okay. And then you explain which part of him you're a big fan of. Then I could see it.
No, I didn't even know he was a scientist. I just know what happens when we turn the lights off, you know.
So. with Shield in the streets, Hydra in the sheets.
That's what every young lady's looking for, from what I'm told, Eric. So obviously there's sort of that tragic realization, and Jessica knows that she can't really leave this situation the way it is. So she does everything she can. And, you know, it's a lot of plot threads that get tidied up, you know, and sort of we have that interaction with Fury to basically end the issue of the series, which is that, you know, like, I'm not really going to call you, Nick, but if you need me, here's my card. I like when they try to be sneaky and they put KL5 instead of 555 because
Klondike KL, 5. Of course,
yeah. Hello, Algonquin 6300. Yeah, exactly. So, KL5. And that's when she's setting up her private detective business, which interestingly, Jessica Jones was also a private detective. It's shocking. But anyway, I digress. So, I thought it's a really interesting kind of reimagining of the character that I feel like some of these tea leaves were there, but I wasn't that familiar with the Jessica Drew character, really even ahead of this. I had legitimately read way more comics with Julia Carpenter in it. Even I think we didn't even know that was her name at first, but she became a member of the West Coast Avengers at one point. And so I would see her and great costume in her own right.
Didn't she name check the West Coast Avengers like towards the end? Like you figure you guys are on the East Coast. Maybe someone needs to take care of the
that's actually not what that is because the character was originally based in San Francisco. So that's how in something that came up today on Marvel Movie Talk when we're talking about X-Men 97. Mm-hmm. In Avengers Annual 10, Rogue and Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel, have an interaction in San Francisco, and that's when Rogue takes Ms. Marvel's powers permanently, as it turns out. Mm-hmm. Jessica Drew is the one to find her and bring her to the Avengers. And gotcha. That story could and possibly should be its own episode to study Avengers Annual 10, written by Chris Claremont, drawn by Michael Golden, neither of whom were on the creative team of Avengers, but they're basically doing kind of a correction to one of the most infamous stories in Marvel storytelling, which is Avengers number 200. So I think that could be something that we do on a future episode. Before we tease our next episode, Eric, are any more final thoughts on Jessica Drew, this story, anything about it that you'd like to share?
It feels like a missed opportunity for the film. Like, I understand, well, we're going with Madame Web, not Spider-Woman, but it seemed like this was actually a very cinematic origin story. And yeah. So, you know, and they maybe grabbed a little piece or two here or there from Madame Web at most, but I'm surprised. It's like when, you know, you see some of these titles that have not been adapted yet, and then you think about what had been, and you're like, wow, like, why would they not have done this? Like, I'm curious, yeah. So, like, you know, Kraven is obviously an origin story, so Kraven's Last Hunt wouldn't necessarily be the right choice for launching a new character. But, I mean, this was actually a really kind of, like, ready-made. I mean, you mentioned it as a series, which I think easily it could have been. But this also could have been a really good standalone movie along the lines of, yeah. like, the Black Widow. But I think it would have been better than Black Widow. I think it actually had everything it kind of needed. And I did think the end was interesting because it didn't really give us a big battle. It was rather she, like, wanted them all there on deck. So she, when she blew up, was it the ship or whatever? They were on a boat or was it just a lab? I'm trying to remember that last scene.
Yeah, I think it was a ship, but yeah, I mean, it was, she took everybody out, but yeah, it's still the same point.
Right.
But yeah,
and it wasn't a big set piece. It was just like, I wanted you all here and then it blows up. I mean, that was it. Like it didn't turn into some kind of like kick-ass action scene, but rather almost like a denouement, like, all right, I got you. And now I'm going to move move on with my life now. I think it could have been a really cool, movie. But alas, I don't see us getting this one after the limited success of Madame.
You know, and look, the rights in general are so tricky. It could turn out very simply, for whatever reason, they don't have Jessica Drew. They would have had to, you know, they have like other Spider-Woman characters. I would wonder what it is, but I feel like we could get this story at some point, you know, at some point Disney will probably buy Sony, right? I mean, that seems inevitable. It's kind of just what they do, you know, but I found this to be very enjoyable. And again, for the story, you know, the superhero stories that we cover here, I'd say some of the least superheroing from everything that we've covered on this show, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's much more character study, much more kind of like a mood piece, really very smart as an origin tale, but I think a complete origin tale. You know, it doesn't feel just like a prequel. And there's always that issue with origin stories, prequels, where you kind of know the ending, so it takes away some of the drama. But I found that knowing the end here didn't take away any of the drama. So, you know, I think this was really smartly done.
Yeah, no, I agree. So obviously, Brian Michael Bendis wrote this along with Brian Reed. I meant to give him some credit. They co-wrote it. And the art team, I assume, because Jonathan and Joshua Luna have the same last name, I'm assuming they're brothers. It could be father, son, could be cousins, could be a lot of things, but I'm just assuming they're brothers. And I thought that it's a great series that I wasn't familiar with this specific collection until I went looking for it, but I'm glad I found it. And I thought that this was a good one that people should definitely check out if they're more interested in, if they're interested in knowing more about Jessica Jones. So check that out. And for our next episode, which I think we mentioned in passing on Marvel Movie Talk that we would be covering this for the month of May. May 29th, time TBD, but possibly 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. But on May 29th, we are going to dive into Grant Morrison's his arc from the new X-Men series that is called E is for Extinction. As we were reacting to episode 5 of X-Men 97, I realized that this would be a perfect Geekscape book club because I've not actually read those stories. I know a lot about what happens and what it, you know, things that gets in motion, but I think this would be a good one. And I believe we're going to have some of our friends from Marvel Movie Talk join us for that. I'm looking forward to that, Eric. I assume that you also haven't, like me, you haven't read that.
No, I have not. So, no, and I'm curious. So, the last few episodes of X-Men 97, right, are like an adaptation of this potentially?
No, I mean, potentially, yes, because okay. The title of those episodes isn't E is for Extinction, but it has Extinction in the title. I'm sort of, you know, spinning my wheels while I look for the save. So Tolerance is Extinction, parts 1, 2, and 3 are the end of X-Men 97's first season. Mm-hmm. Tolerance is Extinction, which certainly sounds like something that Magneto would say. So, yeah, so we'll be getting that. By the time that we talk about these issues, we'll see how much of an adaptation it was. So please join us next month here on the Geekscape Book Club. And whether you've read that or not, reread it or check it out. You know, you might not have heard, but there's a deal where you can get Marvel Unlimited for 97 cents for a month. So that's all right. I unfortunately was subscribed to DC Universe Infinite for an extra month because I wanted to read those Creature Commando stories when we talked to JMD Mateus. So it happens to the best of us, Eric.
Yeah, the best.
The best. So Eric, if people want to keep tabs on you and continue the conversation, where can they find you?
Count Eric Connor over on X, formerly Twitter, and Instagram, and in the wild, April 30th at Colony Theater as part of Home, a storytelling collection where I'll be doing my own almost biblical-like tale of living in Delaware during the height of COVID in 2020.
I will, of course, always be on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Don't forget to subscribe to Geekscape on YouTube and subscribe to this show and our other show, Marvel Movie Talk, on the podcast feed. We're having some great fun talking about X-Men 97 over there. We also broke down the new Deadpool trailer, Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. So you can check all that out. And you can find me on social media at ChristianDMZ. That's all the time we have for now. But as we always like to say on this show, if they keep writing them, we'll keep reading them. See you next month, everybody.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.